another battle against an enemy that cannot be defeated. I have to excite his compassion for my position, inspire his sympathy for my needs, and stay in his memory long enough for him to do something about them both. And this is a man who has beautiful women flinging themselves at him every night of the week, and who has 100 claimants for every post in his gift. He is a usurper and a tyrant, my enemy and the son of my enemy, but I am far beyond loyalty to anyone but my sons and myself. My own father rode out to the Battle of Towton against this man who now calls himself King of England, though he is little more than a braggart boy. I have never seen a man as broken as my father when he came home from Towton, his sword arm bleeding through his jacket, his face white, and said that this boy, this 18-year-old boy, was a commander such as they had never seen before, and our cause is lost, and we are all without hope while he lives. Those of us left in England did not surrender readily. The battles went on and on to resist the false king, this boy of York. My own husband was killed commanding our cavalry only 3 years ago at St. Albans. And now I am left a widow, and what land and fortune I once called my own has been stolen by the victor, the master of this boy king, the great puppeteer who is known as the Kingmaker, Richard Neville, Earl of Warwick. My boys, Thomas, who is 8, and Richard, who is 10, are dressed in their best, their hair wetted and smoothed down, their faces shining from soap. If I let them go for a second, then one will scuff his shoes and the other rip his hose, and both of them will manage to get leaves in their hair and mud on their face, and Thomas will certainly fall in the stream. It sounds like the patter of rain at first, and then in a moment a rumble like thunder. The jingle of the harness and the flutter of the standards, the chink of the chainmail and the blowing of the horses, the sound and the smell and the roar of 100 horses ridden hard is overwhelming, and even though I am determined to stand out and make them stop, I can't help but shrink back. What must it be to face these men riding down in battle, with their lances outstretched before them like a galloping wall of staves? How could any man face it? Thomas sees the bare blonde head in the midst of all the fury and noise and shouts, "Hurrah!" like the boy he is. And at the shout of his treble voice, I see the man's head turn. And he sees me and the boys, and his hand snatches the reins, and he bellows, "Halt!" I step forward, still holding my son's hands, and I open my mouth to plead my case. But at this moment, this crucial moment, I have lost my words. Dear God, I am only 27. My cause is defeated. My husband is dead. Is my life really over? Am I to be one of many poor widows who will spend the rest of their days at someone else's fireside trying to be a good guest? Will I never be kissed again? Shall I never feel joy? Not ever again. He makes a gesture with his hand to the older man at his side, and the man barks out a command, and the soldiers turn their horses off the road and go into the shade of the trees away from me. But the king jumps down from his great horse, drops the reins, and walks towards me and my boys. And his eyes are fixed on my face, as if I know a secret that he has to have, as if we have known each other forever. And I can feel my cheeks are burning, but I cannot look away from him. "Who is this?" he asks, still looking at me.
"Your Grace, this is my mother, Lady Elizabeth Grey,"
my son Richard says politely, and he pulls off his cap and drops to his knee. I sink down into a curtsy, but I cannot look away. "Rise up," he says. His voice is low for only me to hear. "Have you come to see me?"
"I need your help."